South Korea said today it will remove its propaganda broadcasting loudspeakers from the border with the North. The decision coming after Friday's historic meeting between the leaders of the two Koreas. At that meeting, North Korea's Kim Jong-un and South Korea's Moon Jae-in agreed to work toward a nuclear-free peninsula. Joining us now to discuss that and more is retired four-star general Jack Keen, former Army Vice Chief of Staff and chairman of the Institute for the Study of War. He's with us from Washington. General, welcome to Here and Now.
Glad to be here.
And what do you think of what's going on in North Korea? Do you believe that Kim Jong-un is really willing to give up his nuclear weapons?
Well, I think he's doing everything that he can to convince us of that. I mean, he began sort of what I call a diplomatic blitz, beginning with inviting himself to the South Korean Olympics, then having his sister invite Moon to us, the president of South Korea, to a summit. And when the officials came to prepare for that summit, he disclosed to them that he would like them to carry a message to President Trump that he wants to meet with him. He has a meeting with Pompeo, which I believe is a pivotal meeting for the Trump White House, because I spoke to Director Pompeo on the subject of North Korea before he launched, you know, to his meeting. Certainly he never disclosed to me he was going to meet with Kim Jong-un. But this much I do know: the Central Intelligence Agency, more than anybody in our government, clearly has profiled Kim Jong-un. They have the best read on who he is, and he believes Kim Jong-un is a rational actor. So whatever he told Pompeo, I believe when he debriefed the president of the United States, he gave the president some optimism that there's a potential here for a major breakthrough with Kim Jong-un. And I think that's why you hear the president talk about there may be a dramatic breakthrough. This could be a really big event that's coming. And he cautions that all the time. But if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out.
But Kim may look more like a rational actor when he's hugging the leader of South Korea right now. But it wasn't that long ago that he was threatening to, you know, fire missiles at Guam.
Oh, well, it wasn't that long ago that he was talking about killing Americans and raining death on American right. cities. That was last year. So what I think is that this has a different feel to it, because in the last 90 days, Kim Jong-un has done everything that he can to pull out all the stops to drive towards a meeting with Mr. Trump based on what he says is his desire to denuclearize for the safety and security of North Korea in exchange for that, and obviously the removal of the sanctions. All that said, I mean, we're a long way from achieving that, because when we get into that meeting with him, the United States' position is unequivocal. It's complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization, not partial. The United States does not want this to take several years to do, where Kim could drag this out and maybe get some sanction relief and also hold on to a couple of weapons at the end of that. But we're not going to put up with any of that.
I want to ask you about Syria, because you've been writing about it. You supported the president's decision to strike the Assad regime after the suspected chemical attack, but you said those strikes were not sufficient and you want more aggressive U.S. military action in Syria. What are you proposing?
Well, I mean, just dealing with chemical weapons, I thought the first strike was insufficient. In other words, when Bashar al-Assad used chemical weapons last April, we had a very proportioned, measured response. I think we should have taken down his air delivery means, which was resident at 6 airfields, and we could have done that all in one night, take down his air power infrastructure. And this time we came back with and that was a deterrent strike. In other words, so our audience understands, we were using that strike, measured and proportionate, so that he would not use chemical weapons again. A year later, because they had military value to Assad, and that's his pattern of behavior, he did it again.
Right.
So obviously the first strike didn't work. And the second one was another measured, proportionate strike. I felt we absolutely should have done what we could to cripple his war machine, particularly all of his air power infrastructure on the second strike. So, yeah, I think it's insufficient. As to the larger issue with Syria, the United States really doesn't have a strategy dealing with Syria beyond ISIS. When I look at the problem, I think we have to know where we are right now. We squandered many opportunities to be in a much better position than we are now. Russia and the Iranians have successfully propped up the Assad regime. That's just a fact. And we have to recognize that.
And you think Assad needs to go, by the way, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But we have to put a strategy in place, and it's a long-term strategy to achieve that end. What we could do is we've driven ISIS out of eastern Syria. We still have some more work to do there because there's 2,003 ISIS fighters still left there. And when I say eastern Syria, I mean east of the Euphrates River Valley. And what we should do is use that as a base of control, a control zone. Clear ISIS out of there and tell the Russians and the Iranians and the pro-Assad regime, stay west of the Euphrates River Valley. Don't come east of that, or you're going to be subject to be interdicted.
Is that going to require a lot of American troops, though?
No, it would not. I mean, Ambassador Bolton, the new National Security Advisor, at least is reportedly open to the idea of talking to the Sunni Arabs, our regional Sunni Arabs, and helping us with this problem. And they would be hopefully willing to put some troops in that area there to help provide security for that control zone. They would likely ask for U.S. leadership, and I think that would be appropriate. But no, we're not asking for a lot of troops there. What we are trying to do is build a Syrian Arab force, not a Syrian Kurd force, in that area. And that would begin to give us some leverage dealing with the Assad regime. I also think, although we've squandered much of the opportunity, the Syrian moderates are still in southern Syria, and we could begin to reinitiate an aid program to them in terms of weapons, et cetera. We've got to recognize that what the Iranians are about here, they run the war in Syria, and they run the ground war. Their general, four or five of their generals have been killed doing this, and they do it through their proxies, the Hezbollah, and they're clearly conducting a military buildup in southern Syria to encroach on the Israelis. They really want to put in their covert missile and rocket bases like they have in Lebanon so that they can overwhelm Israeli air defense systems by attacking them from multiple directions. That is clearly their intent, and the Prime Minister of Israel is quite concerned about it, and he's not going to stand for it, and that's why he's conducting these attacks. But the regional Arabs have never, ever made a commitment to help us because we only wanted to use them against ISIS. And they've always seen the problem is Assad. So I do think there are still some things that we can do to gain some leverage, albeit limited leverage to be sure.
But is there appetite for that right now? It sounds from what President Trump is saying like he would rather just pull the U.S. completely out of Syria.
And I'm disappointed by that because I think if you just walk away from Syria, what you've done is you've just turned this over to the Iranians and to the Russians who are in a political and military alliance. Syria will become the anchor point for the Iranians' domination of the Middle East. They dominate control Lebanon. They are dominating most of the control in Syria. They have huge political influence inside of Iraq. They began the civil war in Yemen. They toppled the government there, which was friendly to the United States, with a single purpose in mind, is to dominate and control Yemen. The United States has got to recognize that. We've got to form an alliance with our allies to counter that aggression. It doesn't mean that the United States has to provide the dominant amount of military force or the dominant amount of money. I don't think we should. I really think this is more up to the Arabs themselves. But I do think we have to provide some leadership to them. It's sort of like an Arab NATO that has been so successful in dealing with the Soviet Union's aggression post-Cold War, World War II. I think it's as much political and as much economic as it is military.
Well, let me ask you then finally about the Iran nuclear deal, which the president seems poised to pull the U.S. out of. How does that play into this? Do you think that would be a mistake if the U.S. pulls out of that deal? And how does it affect what's going on in the region?
Where the United States is actually right now, diplomatically, for weeks, we have been conducting a diplomatic effort with the United Kingdom, Germany, and France to fix the deal, to create a supplemental. What's on the table is simply this. One is a prohibition on ballistic missiles. Two is access to secret research military sites where we believe there's a possibility of technological advancement on nuclear weapons is actually taking place. And it's not part of the JCPOA or the so-called nuclear deal. The third thing deals with the sunset clauses. And the sunset clauses means in 2025, Iran can have a nuclear threshold capability, which means close to a nuclear weapon, and by 2030 they have a clear pathway to a nuclear weapon. The United States position is we want to keep those restrictions on indefinitely and not have them sunset in 25 and in 30. Initially, the Europeans accepted the first two, and they collectively have pushed back on the third one. If the French come around on that, I suspect there'll be considerable pressure put on Germany and the United Kingdom. So that's where the...
But Iran would have to agree to that, too.
They'll do it regardless of whether Iran agrees. They'll come to Iran, put that on the table, and threaten them with renewing sanctions if they don't agree with it. Hmm. Iran has a choice at that point. They can walk away from the deal. But now they're walking away from the deal. The people that know this regime believe, while the economic benefit from the nuclear deal isn't as great as what the Iranians imagined it would be, it is beneficial to them. And it's likely they would stay in the deal because of the economic benefit to them.
That's retired General Jack Keane, who is now chairman of the Institute for the Study of War. General Keane, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, enjoy talking to you.